The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Got a good one today. Douglas Hughes, Dr. Hughes, the big fundamental. He is in the house. We call him that for a lot of various reasons. Those many reasons are, you know, kind of kept behind closed doors there at our office. But the big fundamental, how can you go wrong with that? So welcome, Doug, to the big show.
It's great to be here, David.
We're going to be talking a lot about retirement expectations versus realities and then the realities of retirement. And later on, income planning. Or are you just simply income guessing? We're going to discuss how it is somewhat of a surprise that the middle class out there in retirement are actually reporting back they're spending a lot more than what they anticipated at different ages and stages of life. So a lot of good stuff to talk about with Doug here in just a few minutes. A little bit of news of the week brought to you by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. It's, of course, supported by us truly at Comprehensive Financial Consultants, the title sponsors of the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. To learn more about the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, go to mcshofhalloffame.com, Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Or in today's world, just Google it and you'll figure out how to make it there. Okay, this is kind of important. This comes from By the Numbers. Very, very sensitive. The duration, which is the measurement of interest rate sensitivity on the current 30-year Treasury bond, which is trading right around 2.8%. So what we're saying is that if you invested in a 30-year treasury, and I doubt any of you have, because who's willing to do that at 2.8%, right? Obviously, some people are, because if they sell them, they're being sold. And interest rates simply went up by 1%. So we're talking, you know, not much, really, on a 30-year bond. You could see the decline in the value of your bond to be as much as 17 to 20%. That's hard to believe. But when you think about 30 years, and if I'm accepting 2.8% and rates go to 3.8% and I have 30 years of earning that, that's 30 more percent I'm going to earn, then you're going to see the value of your bond drop by a lot. That's why we've been cautioning people not to be in long-term debt instruments. Duration, of course, is the measurement of interest rate sensitivity. You know, the average interest paid by the U.S. government on its interest-bearing debt was actually 2.3% as of July 31st this year. The average interest paid on the debt back in 2007, just over 5%, or 2.8% higher than it was back then. For every 1 percentage point increase in the cost of debt on our national's debt of $14.4 trillion of publicly held debt, that's equal to $144 billion of annual tax expense, interest expense. That's a lot of dough. Hey, I found this pretty interesting, too. Consider this. A new state law in Colorado requires a high school guidance counselor to discuss alternatives to college as part of the student's academic and career planning, like military service, trade schools. The law is effective for the school year that begins this month. 70% of all 2016 high school graduates actually enrolled in college. That comes from the Labor Department. And, you know, I talked about this with Glass in the Morning. Been a big discussion, Doug, about not being able to get bus drivers. And there just isn't a lot of people that want to drive a bus. So they thought, well, if we, you know, pay more, then maybe we'll get more bus drivers. Well, maybe that doesn't work. Maybe it does work. But at some point, I suppose, if you throw enough money at it, anyone, maybe even you and I, will go out and drive a bus, but we'll see. But when you think about the people out there that are willing to do certain types of jobs, there's just fewer and fewer of them. And then finally, Doug, $700 million was a lotto this week. I guess it may end up being more. Yeah. I actually bought a ticket last weekend because I was in front of a couple buying a ticket, and I thought, well, what the heck, I'll buy a ticket. And I think, what was it, $400 million, $500 million back then a month ago? And I actually received one of my tickets. I bought four of them. One of them, I got the Powerball, which got me $4 back. I spent $10, so maybe I had five tickets. Spent 10, got five tickets, had one Powerball, got $4 back. My wife cashed it in for me and bought two bottles of water. So not a very good investment if you're doing the math on that. But you were just telling me off air that someone actually won the Powerball.
Looks like they've announced that someone has won. They made a mistake on which city in Massachusetts, and they had to redo that from what I read. But someone out there has won it, and we'll see if they claim. They probably, if they do know that they've won, if they've actually paid attention, they probably have their lawyers on the phone and accountants on the phone and all kinds of things.
I told someone just last night before the drawing, I said, my guess is that it could be a hedge fund that wins this year because $700 million or more, and the possible combinations is $300 million plus. I don't know exactly. So mathematically, if you would go by every possible combination, you have a double or no matter what. Now, the risk would be that someone else might also win, and then you end up splitting the pot. But worst case is you get your money back.
Right.
So if you were counting on less than three people or less than two people winning, might be a pretty good bet. So being that it's from out east, possibly.
It could be.
It could very well be. All right, guys, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about retirement expectations versus what we see as the retirement realities. We'll be back with Doug Hughes. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. You know, last week's show, we were talking about a variety of things, and one of them was different options that folks have when they elect their pensions. Most will have some type of a survivor option. So in other words, if I die, my wife receives 50% of what I'm getting. But for that, I take a slight reduction. We mentioned something last week that obviously struck a tone with many people, and that in the public employee system, at least that in many of the other pension systems as well, you don't have to leave the survivor option to a spouse. It can actually be to a child or a grandchild. And we discussed that. I actually had a couple of emails that said, can we switch our election once we've already made it? The answer is no. Once you've made that election on that important pension decision, you cannot go back and change it. But the concept was, and the conversation with Wayne was, that you could include maybe an adult child as your survivor, and that when you die, they would continue on with that pension for the rest of their lives. Now, remember, for everything you get, you give something up. So if I'm giving money to my son or my daughter, I'm going to give up some of the money now so that they have money later. So just an idea. And remember, they're not going to tell you this exists. You're going to have to know it exists before you can actually go out and do it. The other thing, and Doug, I want to make sure we mention this. We have our upcoming town hall meeting. It is on September 6th. Thank you very much. 5:30 p.m. at the Legacy on South College. It's centered right between our office and Long Family Eye Care, right on South College. And basically what we're going to be discussing is, how do you want to be remembered by your children, your grandchildren, great-grandchildren? Is it more important for your legacy that you leave account values or family values or maybe both? What about income for you now and a gift for future generations later? It should be a very, very good meeting. Already have lots of people signed up. We're getting more and more every day. We're going to limit to about 50 to make it a good, comfortable town hall setting.
And it's going to be creative discussion, too. This is we want people to understand there's going to be a lot of material and examples that you probably haven't thought about, but certainly things that you will walk away feeling like you've learned from other people's experiences. It's not just investment vehicles, it's actually experiences. And we want to really clarify that this is going to be good for people who want to be involved and kind of lift it up, to be honest.
It'll be fun. It'll be a good meeting. You'll enjoy it. Just go to cfci.us and go to the events calendar. You'll see underneath that the town hall. You can sign up right there and reserve. I mean, obviously, there's no cost. You can just come. Enjoy a really good meeting. And while you're there, check out our Social Security and Medicare workshops that are run on the second Tuesday of every month. You can sign up there as well. All right, Doug, we were working on this show. You were working on this show for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you start to think about retirement, everyone has to put together expectations. How much money that I'm going to need or want, how the markets are going to perform, where interest rates are going to be, where inflation's going to be, anything like that seems to be of normal thinking. That's the expectations. But then we have the realities. And the realities are that markets don't always go up. Income maybe isn't going to be the same. Maybe your health stays the same. Maybe it doesn't. Insurance premiums are maybe not going to remain the same. There's just a variety of the realities of retirement that certainly don't line up directly with the expectations.
Well, David, and I think that one of the lessons I learned very young in my life and certainly in my financial planning career is that every long-term plan must be flexible. We've gone away from the traditional view of retirement, and you and I have talked about this so many times, that there was a time in this country where you knew after a certain amount of years that you were going to have a Social Security check, you're going to have a pension, and everything was going to be paid for. Everything was systematic, and you knew in advance what to expect. Well, when that paradigm shift, and then all of a sudden that we had to start preparing for our own retirement, we had to, you know, make sure our savings was right. We had to find investment vehicles that provided income, some that provided growth. And we got really spoiled through different decades of the markets just going straight up. And so people kind of expected, you know, I don't know if I need as much systematic explanations as I do just the markets are always going to take us higher. But the truth of the matter is the markets both, and I want to say this very clearly, both stock and bond can become very volatile. And if they become volatile at the wrong time, the expectation that the market only goes up and that you have, you know, a lot of these calculators, there's a difference between like a Monte Carlo type simulation, which is an asset allocation, how we work in various markets, versus 6% every single year steady up. All those returns look very different. And so we always say to people that you really need to take a step back and ask, what are your expectations out of this investment vehicle? And how does that relate to the overall retirement plan?
Well, and I think just going back and thinking about the expectations, expecting the perfect outcome.
Right.
And in this world, you certainly cannot do that in a variety of situations.
And as we say, David, to everyone who comes to the door, don't just put that into your stock account. You can be a person who holds real estate, and real estate can have a volatile swing. You can be a person who owns bonds, and that can be volatile. And also think about the people who own certificates of deposit at the bank, CDs, who were just 7, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, getting 5% for 5 years. And now they're lucky to get 1 or 2 for 5 years.
Yeah, a little older than 10 years ago, but not much longer.
And so the reality is that volatility and unearthed expectations or challenged expectations come in a lot of different ways. And so we always caution people to make sure that long-term plans have flexibility, because stock markets can go up, but bond markets can go down, and vice versa. And real estate can do well, but then real estate can have a hard time. So this whole idea that retirement is just a very simple expectation upwards, sometimes things come through and change that.
They think that if I replace 100% of my take-home pay, and I think that insurance premiums are going to be exactly what they are today 10 years from now, that things don't cost more 10 years from now than they do today, those are all unrealistic expectations. Like Doug said, even when you think about the market, that I think the market will be higher 10 years from now. Do I think that? Sure, I think that. Am I guaranteed that? No, I'm not guaranteed it. Do I think interest rates will be higher 10 years from now? Yeah, I kind of think that. Are we assured of that? No, we're not assured of that. Just look at Japan. So there's a lot of expectations that you have, definitely a reality check. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the realities of retirement and not so much the expectations. And then how do you mitigate some of the risk associated with the realities? We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. The realities of retirement. It's kind of a shocking thing, to, I guess, to think about, because that is really the fear that people have, is that what is the realities of retirement? You know, I'll even start with this. When we get away from the monetary side of things, what am I going to do with my time? You know, how am I going to fulfill my time? How am I going to get those attaboys, or that's going to get me up out of bed every morning and get me excited about retirement? You know, I find a lot of people when they're newly retired, it's somewhat like a honeymoon, Doug. They are excited. They're getting to do things they weren't able to do before, maybe had the time to do. They don't have timelines anymore, which can be somewhat dangerous as well. But at some point, all of a sudden they say, you know what, I don't know how I had time to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've heard that maybe 10 out of 10 times when it comes to
exactly
retirees.
Right. And you know, David, it's sometimes it's not hobbies. Sometimes it's just taking care of family.
Yeah, sure.
That changes, and they didn't realize what needs are out there as far as just even taking care of family. So we see this, we always talk to people about this lifestyle planning.
Mm-hmm.
And when the markets are up, people are, you know, thinking more about lifestyle planning. When markets are down, people are thinking more about their investments. But the reality is, whether the markets are up or the markets are down, you have to put some time and some thought into your lifestyle planning.
As we talk about some of the other realities of retirement, one thing you ran across, a study that came
yes.
about that said that, hey, we're actually spending more
mm-hmm.
in retirement than what we anticipated spending. And not all of it's just discretionary spending, Doug. A lot of it's very much necessity. But I think the numbers are somewhat eye-opening and shocking for some.
Yeah, this is a great report. Came out just at the end of 2015. And it simply says this. After 3 to 4 years in retirement, 41.5% spent more than their pre-retirement levels.
Hmm.
Now, what's interesting about that is that for years, we've always been taught you need 80% of your take-home income. And now after 3 to 4 years, people, 41.5% are spending more than pre-retirement levels. After 5 to 6 years in retirement, 33.4% still spent more than their pre-retirement levels. And you may say, well, what's the difference there? Well, you know, we talk to people, David, about the reality of what happens when you first retire. And some of the best advice I think that I have ever given, or at least I've been complimented on the most, is I always say to people about 3 to 5 years before you retire, you need to get a blank sheet of paper
mm-hmm.
and walk around your house and just write down what you're going to need to replace or repair. A lot of people don't do that, but that one practice alone will show you what you're going to be spending on money on the next 5 to 10 years. And if people don't do that and then they retire, we have seen this over and over again, a new roof, a new this, a new that. And people who said, I just need X amount a month to live on, don't factor in
mm-hmm.
that new roof or that new refrigerator, and goes down the list. So in what this report is saying, that even after 5 to 6 years, even after you've gone over those initial first expenses of retirement that sometimes people draw out, there's 33.4% are still spending more than pre-retirement levels. And then by the sixth year of retirement, 23% of households are spending 120% more than what they did in the years just prior to retirement. Now, the good news is that shows you 76% are not.
Right.
But if you're in that 23%, a very good long-term flexible income plan is going to be very important for your success.
It's like building a house and you're thinking, I need to put some overages in just in case.
Just in case.
A lot of houses coming on budget, but many do not. I had a client years ago, Doug, who retired and went off in an RV for about 4 months, came back, and I said, you know, hey, how's your cash flow?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we meeting income expectations? And he said to me, you know, Dave, as soon as I figured out that I wasn't on vacation,
yeah,
that I was actually retired, then we got things under control. But you know how it is when you're on vacation. You know, you don't think about eating out a lot, spending, you know, money that you wouldn't necessarily spend at home.
Right.
You're doing the renting the Sea-Doos maybe that you wouldn't rent at Mike Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere. You spend a lot of money. And I think in the early stages of retirement, sometimes it can feel like that, like you're on honeymoon, you're on the vacation, and you do spend some excess dollars. Where this came to, I think, open my eyes was this isn't 3 months after retirement.
No.
This is many, many years after retirement.
Many years, yeah. And the impact of that withdrawal on a portfolio,
especially early on,
is huge.
It's enormous. Matter of fact,
you can read article after article. We can show you example after example. Those early withdrawals have such an impact, specifically if then you add in a market downturn. It can really cause havoc years 8, 9, 10 throughout.
Other realities of retirement, you wrote down, incomes can change. This is where I see the most income change, not necessarily that your pension goes away or Social Security gets reduced. It's that you have a death of a spouse.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a death of one spouse, you always lose at least one check, maybe two, because at least one Social Security check goes away and possibly reduction in pension. And the double whammy is your taxes go up. You go from a married filing joint tax return, the most favorable of all, to single taxpayer, the most hated of all. So things like that can change. your health status will change. You know, maybe you come out of into retirement with a Medicare supplement, an Advantage plan, whatever, and then you shortly realize or soon realize that, you know what, those $8,000 hearing aids that I need, mm-hmm. they're not covered. What about the bifocals or trifocals? They're not covered either. Man, those dental implants I need, Doug, they're $1,000 a piece. Man, those aren't covered. So I know it would be difficult to do what you suggested, walking around the house and saying, well, I'm going to need a new furnace in the next few years. There's $4,000. I'm going to need a new roof in a few years. There's another $15,000. I'm going to need this, that. It'd be hard to anticipate when you're going to need hearing aids, if at all,
yeah.
or dental work, if at all, or medical devices to help you see. But these are real expenses that everyday people have, and yeah. that's the realities of retirement. We're not trying to scare people. We're trying to prepare people.
Exactly. And the reason why I mentioned doing that 3 to 5 years out is that while you're working, get some of this stuff conquered so that you don't have to immediately take a withdrawal out of your lump sum, mm-hmm. be a tax on it, and then continue the monthly payments. It's just prudent planning.
One last reality, and there's a lot of them. We talked about expenses can change quickly. But there's other expenses that can change quickly that maybe you don't even think about. Like oil prices go from, you know, $40 to $120 again, and all of a sudden gas is back up to $4. You know, we mentioned home repairs. There's a lot of things that can change. But here's something very interesting. Had an opportunity to talk this week with a new person that just retired, a young person, 58. And he's able to pick up some income and some other mm-hmm. facets of his life after retirement. But he said to us, I know I have enough. I know I'm going to be okay, but I'm so afraid to spend any mm-hmm. of this money.
Yeah.
And I think that's a reality of retirement that no one really thinks of. And that's the fear of dipping into what I've saved for so long to actually provide for my retirement.
Exactly. And David, that's part of behavioral finance. We just cannot stand the idea of losing what we've taken 30 or 40 years
whether
to
it's through
gain.
Spending or loss in
spending,
the market.
Yeah, exactly right. And so that becomes just a behavior that people have to navigate through. Now, the flip side of that, boy, haven't we seen people who have come into maybe a pension rollover or a lump sum money at one time, and the next thing you know, they've got the hot rod they always wanted, the bass boat they always wanted, and all these different things. And the idea is, well, I've scrimped, I've saved, I've done all that I can do.
I deserve this.
And we don't try to take that away from people.
No,
it's just a reality that behavior becomes that.
Well, to your point, and then we'll take a quick break. If someone comes to me, I just had this happen today, and they said, you know, I'm going to need, she's 63, I'm going to need a new roof, I need some insulation in my house, and have some flooring that needs repaired. Well, how much do you think you're going to need? She goes, well, right now, probably $25,000, maybe as much as $30,000. I go, okay. Well, let's do some calculations. Not that she's going to not be able to do this, but I want to give you the expectations that we ran some math and said, okay, if you take out $30,000 today, that when you are 73, 10 years from now, you're going to have about $50,000 less money.
Mm-hmm.
So that $30,000 is really costing you $50,000 over the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you take that to 20 years out, and those numbers get scary. And this person's 63, 83. We have a lot of people 83 out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of people 93. Actually, have some people 100 right now. I have a new client just turned 100.
Wow.
And you know what? She's doing great. Can't see very well, can't hear very well, but health-wise, doing fantastic. Mm. So, folks, you got to have the realities, at least in your peripheral vision, and not just put your blinders on and ignore it completely. Hey, when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the ways you can mitigate some of these risks of the realities of retirement through income planning versus income guessing. One of Doug's favorite terms. I hear him say it all the time. We'll be back, guys. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. I love that intro music.
Yeah.
Some of the other ones, I jump in right away to get rid of it because I don't like it very well. That one, I just feel like you should be on a beach somewhere, your toes in the sand, maybe in the Caribbean, just enjoying a nice, breezy day out there on the ocean. I love being on the ocean. Doug, you love being on the ocean.
I love being on the ocean, yeah.
Not just for the fishing, but the sun, the fun, the surf, all that good stuff. And we're going to be in wintertime before you know it, even though here we are in August, and it feels like September or October, which has been great. I love this kind of stuff, but it won't be long, folks, and you'll be you know, nipping at your nose, as they say. Doug, we've been talking about the realities of retirement. Hopefully we haven't scared too many people into thinking, golly, I'll never be able to retire. It's just more about being aware of the extra things. I mean, Fidelity came out with some research that said that it's going to cost an average couple that's 65 about $250,000 of out-of-pocket medical expenses, not including premiums or long-term care in retirement. And that's the things I mentioned before, whether it be, you know, dental work or hearing aids, eyeglasses, whatever it is, any medical device that isn't covered by insurance. So it can be daunting, it can be expensive, but just being aware of it and being just, you know, kind of, I don't want to say ready for it, but certainly don't be surprised by it, because our expectations usually and rarely meet the realities of retirement. Doug, you coined a phrase some time ago. I'm sure you stole it from someone, like we steal every really
cool phrase. I actually
got
this one from Dan, who got it from someone else.
Well, yeah, every cool phrase we've gotten from someone who probably got it from someone who got it from someone who probably got it from me.
Net worth versus net income, I thought of, but I'm sure someone else said that. Right. But this one I can't take credit
for. Yeah, income planning versus income guessing. And we were talking about this before. Income guessing is just that, you know, I think I'm going to need about this much. And then you come to find early on that, probably I need a little bit more than that. Income planning is fantastic and great. In theory, sounds perfect, but sometimes too rigid of a plan can cause you problems as well. If you say, I am going to spend this and no more, and something comes up and it blows up my plan, especially early on, that can be a mistake. But Doug, one of the things I've always liked to talk to people about, and I know you do too, is when we think about covering the essential expenses of our lives. And what is that for you? Okay, maybe it's your home. It's going to be certainly your utilities and your food. But what about things like, you know, gifts that you give, or vacations that you take, or golf trips that you go on, or fishing trips you go on? Things in retirement where you think to myself, I want this no matter what. I think that if you have an essential expense to you, that you should cover those things with guaranteed or contractual income, and then let the other money be at risk. Now, what I mean by that is contractual income, something that someone says contractually cannot change. Guaranteed income, Social Security, maybe payments from pensions or annuities, those are guaranteed. And I think for a lot of people, Doug, if you can cover the essential expenses, and again, it isn't just room and board and food and, you know, whatever, it's the other things they want to do, I think people have more at ease when it comes to their retirement.
There isn't anyone who wants to put their things that are necessary in life up for grabs. Nobody wants to be guessing whether they have money for food or money for transportation. Nobody wants to be guessing about that stuff. Everyone wants to know exactly what's there and how to budget for it. We used to call it home economics back when you and I were in middle school and high school. We had home economics class. And home economics really was just about, okay, what do I know is coming in on a consistent basis, and how do I budget that?
Right.
And the point, David, that you're making is that essential expenses are simply that. They're essential. Vacations are, we may feel like they're essential,
yeah, but
in retirement,
essential
they're not essential.
Yeah.
And so when we look at these things, the contractual income that can be available to people, it used to come in the form of a company-sponsored pension,
right,
or a state-sponsored pension. But those days, really, for most people, have kind of wiped away. They're just not out there anymore. And so we always say, take a look at what is contractually guaranteed income streams that you can outlive, and, by the way, that your spouse cannot live, because there's opportunities to make income joint.
So today I had someone came in, they said, okay, we have all the essential expenses covered. In fact, very, very happy with their situation. But they wanted to know if they could take some extra money out to help a child purchase a home. And I said, well, what do you mean? Because you certainly have the money. Do you want to know how it will impact you later if you take it out now? Yeah, that's what I want to know. Well, how much are you thinking? And they didn't know, but they were thinking, you know, maybe $10,000, $20,000 to help. Okay, so I just simply did some quick calculations. And then once again, you know, in 20 years, they were shocked to see what a $20,000 withdrawal today would mean to them 20 years from now. Well, what about $10,000? So, you know, we were able to do some math for this, so they would say, okay, that sounds good to me. But that was coming out of the discretionary bucket, not their necessity bucket, which is a big difference, because then they thought, well, okay, I can probably give up this or give up that, or maybe not do this or not do that for the joy of helping my child get a
home
now.
Absolutely, yeah. And David, when we talk about the truth of spending, there's that old That old word that just comes around,
come on,
the big inflation.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, the fact is we're in a low inflationary environment. The bond market tells us that when you have a 30-year treasury rate at 2.75 or 2.8, that's basically saying there's little inflation. Now, in everyone's everyday life, I think they're feeling some inflation for sure. So let's do some things. A lot of people are worried about the inflation getting rampant, and I'm not so worried about that. But let's say that it gets to 4%. And you say, well, what does that mean to me? What that means, if you use what I call the reverse rule of 72, and that's when you divide the inflation rate into 72, that tells you how many years it will be before you need to double the income you have to buy the same stuff you do today. We'll do the math. 4 into 72, 18 years. So in 18 years, with a 4% inflation rate, I need twice as much income, which means I need twice as much money to provide that same buying power that I have today. Inflation is the ultimate erosion of your purchasing power. Ask anyone who bought a house in the 60s. I can assure you that the last car they bought cost more than that first home. Now, my wife and I actually lived in a trailer when we first got married, so any car you buy is worth more than our first home.
Well, and David, you know, when we go back to the expectations earlier, one of the expectations that quietly and silently people don't know that they have is that inflation stays low. There's no guarantee of that. And back to your point about doubling your income, let's just go back to this report that I just read about earlier. 45, 41%, 33%, and then 23%. Large numbers of people are spending as much or more 5 to 6 years in. And then the next thing you know, it's got to go up from there. Retirements last a long time these days. Folks, we're just trying to help you have some very good realistic expectations.
Two quick things. One, your most biggest expense in retirement without a question is taxes.
Mm-hmm.
All those retirement accounts, every time I take money out, 20, 25, 30, 40% gets taken off the top. That's an expectation that taxes will always remain the same. I think that's not the reality. Number two, we've always talked about this, that people spend more, and they do, more money in the early years of retirement than they do the later years. So just think about this. A 65-year-old spends more money doing things than someone who's 95, right? That's true. There's a lot of research behind that. But what Doug's pointing out is instead of it being the old go-go, slow-go, no-go years, it seems to really be the go-go, go-go-go. And maybe never really slow down years. You got to be careful when you put these types of plans together. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about some research that Doug found on the middle class in retirement. First of all, who considers himself the middle class? I think that's very fascinating. There's a wide range in incomes in America when it comes to who they consider themselves to be and what class. And do they use a financial advisor? And if so, at what age? Very cool stuff. The debt dilemma that many of them face. And then the advantage to using an advisor in retirement. A lot of real cool stuff. Not a lot of time to get through it. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hope you've enjoyed the show so far. We've been talking about the retirement expectations versus realities. Income planning versus income guessing. Doug Hughes has been with me the entire time. We've learned that maybe it's not so much the go-go, slow-go, no-go years, but maybe it's more the keep-on-going years and maybe never really slow down. I certainly know people like that. And that's what the difficulty in planning a retirement like that, to say, okay, at 76, I'm going to spend 70% of what I spent at 75. Really? I mean, is that really how that works? I don't think so. I mean, I think you can sort of lay a plan out with those expectations, but just like anything, you've got to ease into it. I mean, you can't just jump right into the cold water. You need to put your toe in, slip into your ankle, your foot, and then sort of that danger zone where everyone hates to slip in. But yeah. Then once you get in, it's not too bad, even when the pool is only 82 degrees when you think it should be 86. That happened to me last weekend. Someone said, the water feels great, jump right in. I jumped right in, and they were lying to me.
Yeah.
But that happens.
Well, people do that, yeah.
Doug, middle class America.
Interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting. It comes from a big major company that had a survey that came out in 2017 about, number one, just kind of, because we always talk about middle America, middle class, but when you think about the middle class, who considers themselves the middle class?
Exactly. Well, before we get into who considers themselves and how they come up with that idea, it's interesting that over the last 5 years, that 5 years ago, 70% of people surveyed in America said they were middle class, 30% said they were not, and 5 years later, 29% said they're not, and 71% said they are. Mm. So it's a number that just hasn't changed in 5 years. When they are asked, how do you attribute, what do you attribute middle class status to? It's level of income, and then other is lifestyle. So some people don't know that it's an income number. Some people think it's a lifestyle number. But then when you get down to when you identify and you self-identify as a middle-class household, what is the largest percentage? What is that range of income? And David, 50% of the people who self-surveyed, considering themselves middle-class or not, 50% of them said income between 50 household income between $50,000 and $125,000 call themselves the middle class.
Well, and if you look at some of the numbers on the fringes there, there's a lot of other people that call themselves middle class that have either a lot more income or certainly
what,
a lot less.
What is interesting is it goes down, but then the people who are surveyed and the income between $150,000 and $200,000, mm-hmm. they consider themselves middle class
I
as
think
well.
A lot of this comes from your upbringing. You know, we were both brought up, I would consider, middle class, right?
At best,
lower middle class, I don't know. But, you know, I think people just identify with their upbringing and where they are currently in their lives. You know, I don't think anyone ever considers themselves. I mean, there's certainly the mega wealthy, but I think for most people, they think of themselves as, you know, run-of-the-mill Americans. I found this pretty interesting. The majority of middle-class Americans do use a financial advisor, and they have some insight to their financial picture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, how many of those are there? Well, 52% of the people as self-defined actually use a financial advisor. As you move up in age and you look at what age they use them, it's actually late 40s, early 50s is when the middle class actually engages with a financial advisor. I can't argue with that. That
Not
seems to
all.
Be pretty much in
and,
line
and,
with what we've experienced.
And David, how many times as you've been giving these demographic discussions have we talked about that time in life when the kids are out of the house and you begin, what, paying down
paying
your
debt,
debts and saving
attention.
Your retirement.
Paying attention. Just got an ESPN alert on my phone. It's funny because I actually have my phone out here to kind of keep tabs
keep
of
tab
how,
all the time.
How long
yeah.
we're going. And I get all these silly alerts that pop up, and the ESPN one just blocked everything I had to see. And when I clicked it, it didn't have anything on it. Otherwise, we would have reported it quickly to everyone.
Yeah.
It would have been a big recruit that IU just landed
there
or something like that.
Very good.
Other things from the middle class, you know, the debt dilemma. It's interesting that, again, when you look at the middle class as a broad scope, mm-hmm. the debt that they carry isn't that great, like $25,000, $30,000 a household, most of it's on mortgages. But when you narrow it down again, once again, to ages and stages of life, there's a lot of debt that's loaded up on the younger people with mortgages, student loans, things like that, Doug, which can certainly hamper their ability to save and prepare for the future. So the debt dilemma is real.
It's very real, David, and this survey just comes back and says that more than 4 in 10 Americans spend up to half of their monthly income on debt repayment. Hmm. That is including a mortgage, but up to half of their income is spent on debt repayment, which means that the other 50% of it, let's say, has to pay for savings for retirement, college education for kids, and this running the household
eating
every
out.
Month. It's
right.
just it's a really tough scenario that's going on out there when people have debt.
What you're saying, there's an old country song. My
too
month.
Much month at the end of the money.
Yes. Too much month at the end of the money. Look for that on your local country radio station, I guess. The last thing, Doug, the advisor advantage, also in this survey from 2017, plans designed to withstand market cycles, keeping people on track with savings, keeping time horizons in perspective, working with an advisor overall. I mean, it looks like those in the middle class that have worked with an advisor are reporting back much higher success than those that have went it alone.
I think part of it, David, is that the people who are with an advisor versus the people who are without advisor, they have a different view of savings. So, for example, the people who have an advisor, they look at it and they typically have, you know, quite a bit more money saved, and not only saved, but they have a put together savings plan.
Mm-hmm.
The people who don't have an advisor, it kind of just dumb luck into, hey, here's what I'm going to defer into my 401k. I'm going to get the match. I don't have any savings planned upon that. And the people who don't have an advisor, 53% of people who don't have an advisor self-identify as not having a savings plan.
Mm-hmm.
People with an advisor identify as having a well-thought-out savings plan. Dr. Jeff Rosenzweig, who is this program back in 2008, said the people and the financial advisors who are going to do the best are the people who have identified and working savings plans. And here we are, David, in 2017, looking back at the numbers. Perhaps no truer words have been spoken.
I know, we took that to heart. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, wrap up the big show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. If you missed any of the show and you'd like to hear it in its entirety, you can always catch it on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., WGCLradio.com. Go over to iTunes and subscribe there. Just go into the iStore and type in Your Money with David Hayes. It'll pop right up. A beautiful blue background. Terrible picture, but, you know, but good content, I
hope.
Good
content.
And you can subscribe, and then basically you'll get an alert every time a new podcast gets uploaded. Or if you're a Google person, go to Google Play Music and do the exact same thing. I'm an iPhone user. I'm not exactly sure how the Google stuff works, but those Android users, they know how it works. They know how everything works, and they, for some reason, despise us iPhone users. It's funny how that works.
It is.
Wayne in the office is a Droid user, and he swears by it, will never become an iPhone person. I think the iPhones, personally, are for people that maybe aren't quite as technologically savvy and just want to push a button and not have to worry about it.
Right.
Those other guys, they kind of like to tinker a little bit. So maybe the iPhones are more for us older people. I hate to throw us in that category, Duggar, but I'm afraid that we meet the demographic.
We're there.
Maybe the younger people, and I'm not saying Wayne's younger by any stretch of the imagination, but possibly that's what is attracted to that. All right, we have next week coming up. It's going to be here before you know it. And next week's show will be a little bit interesting because I will be flying from Sioux Falls, South Dakota on Thursday to Chicago, land in Chicago at 1 o'clock, I think, hopefully, and then hopefully get out of Chicago, which you all know how that goes, out of O'Hare, down to Indianapolis. We have a time change, so that makes it 2-something. Drive back to Bloomington for a 3:30, 4 o'clock, maybe arrival. I have the show, and then the big game.
The big game.
Indiana versus Ohio State, Doug, right here in Bloomington.
Do you have any
College
thoughts?
Game day.
Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I'm one of these suckers that every year just believe, you know, that
it could happen.
We're going to have Christmas in July or Christmas in August, that it could happen. And I'm no different this year than I ever am. I think that if you're going to take on Ohio State, take them on the first game of the year, why not? Get it out of the way. We've seen people like Appalachia State, I guess, beat Michigan in opening games like that. So you never know what can happen. Big environment. I'm sure we'll come out with some jitters, and we'll see how it goes. It should be fun. Our RV spot got moved this year because of the construction on the north side of the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are used to coming by and saying hey to us, we'll still be there, but not there. So we'll be out in the RV lot. And then, it should be a long night. I don't think the game starts until basically, like, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night.
Oh, wow.
So that's going to be a really late night.
Yeah.
And then, you know how that goes.
Yeah.
We'll see. That morning comes around really, really quick. And then school the next day. So we'll see about if you hear someone named Will Hayes get called in just a little bit late, just go with it, please. Just go with it. All right, guys. Hey, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening, everyone. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.